Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
And with us on the line now is Geoffrey Mark, a man that critics have called a walking encyclopedia of show business history. He hosts a radio show dedicated to the music of Ella Fitzgerald and has written acclaimed biographies on Ethel Merman and Lucille Ball. His latest book is Ella, a biography of the legendary Ella Fitzgerald. Welcome to the show, Geoffrey.
I'm so happy to be with you.
Oh, it's lovely to have you with us. Thank you so much for joining us. So you've had a kind of a connection with showbiz your whole life, really, haven't you?
Well, yeah, I got started as a professional in show business when I was 15. And it's been a few years since then. So, yes, I've my entire life has been about show business.
Oh, nice. And from so many different aspects as well. You know, you've performed, you've written. What's your do you have a favorite?
I'm such a ham. Anytime I'm in front of an audience or have a microphone in my face, I'm a very happy camper.
Nice. So how did these books come about? What was the first book that you wrote?
The first book, I've written two books about Ella Fitzgerald, and it came about because I was a bad boy. I developed in my middle 20s, unfortunately, alcoholism and drug addiction. And I'd been a stage and nightclub performer, and I kind of gave it up for a few years because I was too busy supposedly having a good time. Mm. When I got clean and sober at 30, and I've been clean and sober ever since, I wanted to go back into show business, but I didn't know what to do. I was afraid the stress might cause me to drink or drug again. So I asked myself, on what platform do I stand that makes me different from other people? And what you mentioned, this knowing this history of show business. And I figured, well, if I write a book, I won't get any rejection until the book is finished. You know, it's not every day. It's just once. Well, I went out and bought a very old-fashioned, well, it was brand new at the time, PC with an amber monitor and no windows, and started writing. And how did I know that would become a bestseller and relaunch me and back into show business? And goodness, since then, you know, Emmy Award, Grammy nomination, citation from Congress. Wow. Here in the United States. I've been a very, very fortunate man.
Oh, well, talent. It's come from talent. It's not luck.
I'm glad you said that, but I wouldn't have said that.
So let's talk about some of the amazing women that you've written about then. Ethel Merman, sorry. The biggest star on Broadway for many, many years. And she led a really fascinating life, a troubled life at times.
Yes, and I fear that, you know, outside of the United States, she's not known as well as she was known here. And even here, the woman who starred in 15 hit Broadway musicals and introduced over 40 songs that became standards is starting to become forgotten. And it breaks my heart because there was no one else like her. I'm really sorry that she never performed on London's, West End or anywhere else in Europe in a show. She did appear on British television, and she appeared, I think, on television in Europe, but not playing a part in a show. She was brilliant. Just there was no one else like her. No one who could be as funny as she was and then sing the way she did. So her career was brilliant. Her personal life was not happy and sometimes tragic.
Yeah. You mentioned her voice. She really did have a unique and recognizable voice, didn't she?
Well, it's amazing considering Merman never had voice lessons, and yet she had the power of an opera singer. Mm. That when she sang on a stage, as somebody once said, she opened her mouth and the walls of the theater withdrew 3 inches. You could hear her everywhere over the orchestra without a microphone. And that was pretty darn good back in the days when there were no microphones on Broadway stages. It was just your voice and the orchestra.
Yeah, impressive. And you've also written the Lucy book, all about Lucille Ball. It's been really called the Bible by Lucy fans, which is nice.
It is. It's wonderful for me. My mother used to say that I learned to talk at the age of one because I watched I Love Lucy and I thought she was talking to me. So I talked to her back. What I did was that there had been in the 1970s and 80s a series of books written about her personal life. I know all the people who wrote them, nice people all, but not accurate. Some of it out and out. What's a good word for lie that doesn't mean lie? No, I can't help it. Out and out lies or a grain of truth and then a bonnet of nonsense on top of it. And I said, this is not why we love Lucy. We don't revere what she did because of whom she supposedly slept with or that she supposedly fought with Mr. Arnaz. We love her because of the work. So the book was a look at her television work, her live television in the 40s until she died. And Steve Allen wrote a foreword for it, and Lucy Arnaz and Desi Jr. wrote a foreword for it. And as you said, it was enormously well received. Next year, the new Lucy book is coming out, and I'm adding in her films and her radio shows with a new foreword by Fran Drescher, and I'm really excited about it.
Oh, fantastic. And it's amazing to have the support by the Arnaz family. And I know that you did some very rare interviews as well with Lucy Arnaz and Desi Arnaz Jr., which is very special.
Well, the support came about from their end of things. Lucy and I get along famously. We have become friends, and she's a wonderful, wonderful woman. Just apart and aside from her amazing talent as a person, she's a wonderful woman. And it was Desi who gave me the authorization. The very first time I interviewed Desi, I think I spent 12 hours at his house nonstop. It was just time to go home. It was like 10 o'clock at night or something. And as he was taking me to the door, he said, well, if this book ends up being like the questions you're asking, I'm going to give you authorization that you can put on the cover, authorized by the estate. However, if this is one more book slandering my parents, I will emasculate you. Only he didn't use that word. And we shook hands. And of course, I promised the Arnazes that they would read the entire book as is before it got published. So they both saw it. And Desi also, a wonderful friend to me. So yeah. Above and beyond the work itself, I got to know so many fascinating people because of writing the book. And many of them became friends, and a few of them are even still alive.
Yeah, that's lovely. And gets you a real unique insight into the person. You know, we can all use Google, but meeting people who knew her and worked with her and members of the family, I mean, they're the best possible research you can ever get.
And I got to interview her long before I wrote the book. She did a symposium at what is now called the Paley Center in New York City. And we engaged. I asked her, you said, or your dear friend Jack Benny said, and that got her attention, that people tune into situation comedies all over the world because the lead characters do some sort of shtick or have a catchphrase or there's something they do, not every single week, not every time, but you tune in to hopefully hear this stuff. And I said to her, there were two things you've given up in your career. You gave up the crying Jag you know, wah, that thing.
Mm.
And you give up a noise her writers called the spider, going, and I said, why did you give him up? You were so well known. And she stopped for a second. I thought I had embarrassed her. She said, young man, that's the most intelligent question that anyone's ever asked me about my comedy.
Oh, and, wow.
And that led to 20 minutes of talking back and forth. And she was, I think, one of those people who's very insightful about other people. And at one point she said, look, we got to stop talking. There are other people here. I got to answer their questions too. And I still stood up. I still had the mic in my hand. And she said, why aren't you sitting down? She went, oh, I get it. Okay. Just for you. Now sit down.
Wonderful.
So she made the noise just for me, which was a thrill.
Oh, absolutely. That's fabulous. So let's talk about Ella Fitzgerald. Where did your love of Ella come from?
A strange place. I was very aware of all the great singers of my grandparents' time, my parents' time, and what was going on when I was a youngster. I heard Ella's name, but somehow I never saw her perform. I don't know how that happened. Honestly, I don't. I thought she was a gospel singer. Mm-hmm. And there was a program in the United States called Dinah Exclamation Point that was hosted by Dinah Shore. It was an afternoon chat show. And she was saluting the first ladies of Beverly Sills, first lady of opera, Elizabeth Taylor, first lady of American cinema, Lucille Ball, first lady of television, and Ella Fitzgerald, first lady of song. And I tuned in to see Lucy. But when Ella began to sing, it's like I heard clang, 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 clang in my head. Who is this? How is she doing that? That's impossible. She's pulling notes out of the air. It's obvious she's improvising. And I had to know more about her. And I very soon became an expert, and that led to writing the book.
Yeah. I mean, she really did have an incredible, fascinating rags to riches story, didn't she? She was very, very poor growing up. Tell us a bit about her childhood, because it was very traumatic.
I'm happy to share. I mean, I'm not happy it happened to her, but I'm happy to share it with you.
Yeah.
Ella never knew her birth father. She knew her husband's boyfriend, her husband, listen to me, her mother's boyfriend, who was not African-American. He was Portuguese. And they lived in Yonkers, New York, in a mixed neighborhood back when that kind of thing was a big deal. And so the childhood itself wasn't particularly happy. She loved music. Well, her mother died. And then her stepfather started abusing her sexually. She ran away. And because she ran away, both from her home and from her aunt's home, she was put into a facility for bad African-American girls, where she was systematically not just treated badly for being African-American, but was tortured and raped on a regular basis. And Ella ran away from there and ran to Harlem, where she lived with a house of prostitution. She was their lookout. So they thought a cop was coming. They'd all pull out their knitting and pretend they were having a knitting circle, teaching the young girl how to knit. That's not a great way to start anyone's life.
No.
But the ladies at the Home of Pleasure saw her talent. And they're the ones who submitted her name for an amateur night. And they're the ones who went with her and literally pushed her on stage.
Wow.
And well, because the last act on the bill was a dancing act called the Edwards Sisters. And they were wonderful. Ella was going to be a dancer, not a singer. She wanted to call herself Snake Hips Fitzgerald. And when she saw this last act before the amateur part, she wasn't going to go on. And these ladies of pleasure, I guess today we'd call them sex workers, pushed her on stage. And Ella got hit by a spotlight, and the spotlight loved her. and she loved the spotlight, and off she went.
Gosh, amazing. I mean, how do you even begin to, well, maybe she didn't. I mean, how do you get through a childhood and an upbringing like that and not have emotional scars for the rest of your life? Or did she?
Well, don't we all?
Yeah, good point.
I've never met anyone who survived their childhood and did not in some fashion have scars from it. So that Ella had to deal with those scars publicly. How she dealt with it was a determination, a driving ambition, burning, that she wasn't going to let this stop her from accomplishing something in life. And she was also a very religious woman who rested on her faith when things got really hard. And just worked and worked and worked. The work was her therapy.
Mm. And even when she became successful and known for her incredible voice, she still fought racism, sexism. You know, she was in an industry surrounded by white males, and that always kind of proved difficult for her.
Well, wasn't everybody. but what you're saying is very, very true. The racism was constant. Maybe the last 20 years of her life, it wasn't so obvious. Maybe. I've never been an African-American woman, so I can't tell you how that, to have both of those things. And what a pity that being African-American or being a woman is a burden, as opposed to something to celebrate.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the old white guys gave her a hard time, and she fought against it. She and her manager, Norman Granz, fought against the racism, and they fought against separation of audiences, and they fought against only white audiences for her. She broke an awful lot of barriers, and she was the first African-American to win a Grammy Award.
Yeah, the first person to win two in 1 year as well.
Absolutely. For that magnificent live album she did in Berlin. Do we have time for a story? I know we're running
a little short. Very, very, very quick. I've just realized the time. Very quick.
She was in Berlin in 1960, about to do a European tour. This was kicking off a European tour. And her manager, who I've mentioned, Norman Granz, on her way from the dressing room to the stage, "I want you to sing Mack the Knife." And she said, "Why would I want to sing that?" Well, she didn't know, because she'd been working so much, that both Bobby Darin and Louis Armstrong had number one hits with the song. And she said, "We've never heard a girl sing it. I want you out there singing it." And she wanted to know a part of it. And her pianist, Paul Smith, said, "Look, Ella, we'll do one chorus right towards the end of the show. Just one chorus and off. Don't get upset. Make him happy. We'll do it." And Ella said, "I don't know the words." And Norman Granz said, "It's Germany. They won't know the difference." Well, they did know the difference. And on her feet, in front of 10,000 people, Ella realized she didn't know the words and made up a whole new song using the lyrics where she could remember them. And on her feet, made everything rhyme and everything in proper meter, just as if it had all been planned beforehand. And it was such jazz genius. Ella won a Grammy for the song. Ella won a Grammy for the album. And next to A Tisket a Tasket, her most requested song was Mack the Knife.
Wow. Isn't that an incredible story? Brilliant. Thank you so much for sharing it with us. If listeners want to get a copy of your book, Ella, it's available on our website, tre.radio. It's by Jeffrey Mark, who we've been chatting with today. Jeffrey, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a joy to chat with you.
Well, then have me back, because it's been a joy being with you.
I will. Thank you, Jeffrey. Take care.
Ta-ta.